In a world of EMS podcasters, EMS Office Hours is the only live podcast bringing you the latest topics and opinions in EMS. Turn down your scanner and turn up your speakers as we join Jim Hoffman and Josh Knapp on their latest EMS podcasting journey.
All right. Looks like we are live. Welcome to EMS Office Hours. I'm Jim Hoffman.
I'm Josh Knapp. What are you going to talk about? 10 things I wanted to do on EMS today?
Yeah, that was my original plan. I wanted to talk about this thing that I put on Facebook. It was a little bit of a meme, and I had did like a kind of a Family Feud picture where I had said, name something. If you're an EMT, name something you thought you were going to do at work today, but you didn't. It was just kind of a goof, type thing. But I got like some comments and stuff on it where people were saying what I thought was interesting in response to the meme was the consistency of it. Most of the, I put it on my Facebook page, I put it on first responders of Facebook, paramedics of Facebook, a couple other pages had it, and then some those pages shared it to some other pages too. And a lot of the comments that I was getting were all the same thing, right? And some of it I expected, top five answers, right? Number one, that when I started trying to count the comments, number one was eat, right? People didn't get to eat. They thought they were going to get to eat today at work. They didn't get to eat at work.
Well, come on. You know about that. It's the hot food indicator.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I just thought it was interesting because these are people, right, across the country, right? And so, all working in EMS and all kind of giving the same answers. I didn't get to eat. I didn't get to sleep, which sleep is, you shouldn't go to work expecting to sleep unless you work like a 24-hour shift somewhere.
So let me interrupt here. I get you. I think I get you. You're pointing out the similarities of the wants and the desires of EMS, no matter if you work in a big city or a rural country or wherever you're working in the country, but you're working in EMS. You're going to come across some of the same things. And there are these reoccurring things, right, with EMS. We're the bastard redheaded stepchildren. If you get to work, if you're in a small town and you can work the rig or you can work or the fire rig or the EMS rig. What's the most popular rig? What's the one everybody wants?
Of course, everybody wants to be in a fire truck. Fire engine.
Engine.
I'm sorry,
fire friends.
It's an engine.
Something
great,
didn't
you? It goes, listen, I just thought it was very interesting. One of the answers that I saw that people put a lot of was the actually take people to the hospital that needed to go to the hospital. And
we've covered that right?
Sure. And then another popular answer was, which I thought was kind of funny, is a lot of people saying that not get fired. I guess people go to work and start tearing shit up. And
is that not get fired because you're doing something stupid, or is that not get fired because you want to do what you were sort of alluding to, tearing things up, walking in, taking a piss on your boss's desk?
Yeah, I mean,
How many times, seriously, okay? Because have you been sitting in the seat, the call comes over the radio, it's for a nursing home transport, or they give you the address you recognize and stuff like that, you sort of know, and you just want to pick up the mic and go, dispatch, just show me 62, which is, a code for being out of service, just lack of interest.
Yeah. Yeah.
Show me not going on this job for lack of interest.
Yeah. I used to like when the dispatchers would give us an option of the call. You know, would you like to, I got two jobs in your area. Do you want the OBGYN or do you want the abdominal pain? And then I remember one guy came back and said, let's see, do you want toothpicks in my eyes or go into the OB call? He's like, give me the abdominal pain, you know. I find it in some ways comforting that when you look at people that we're all in the same community, there is, I think, a greater sense of community when you've got people that are doing the same job, EMT and paramedic, and pretty much giving the same answers across four or five different Facebook groups. You know what I mean? It's not just one people that follow me that a majority of them are from New York City, you know, New Jersey, stuff like that. You've got people now that are from other groups that are from over in a higher concentration in the country that are also saying the same type of stuff, you know? And I find it cool that people will respond, you know, to the meme like that. But at the same time, I find it, like I said, a little comforting that you got this sense of community with these groups. And when you post things like that, you feel as if you're not alone. Like you're not the only one that doesn't get to eat on a shift or the only one that feels like, you know, you want to take someone to the hospital that really needs to go to the hospital. You know what I mean? And I just find it, just like I said, just very interesting that you'll get people from all different, you know, walks and different areas, whether they're volunteer, whether they're paid, whether they're fire-based or whatever, kind of say the same thing.
You know, that is an interesting and comforting aspect of this job, right?
Yeah.
And you know, we could take it down another level, which I think we have discussed in the past in terms of how you're feeling. You know, you just did and we could use the old example, the old, you know, super horrible examples of a pediatric arrest or a young person arrest, or even somebody who's not even that old, maybe semi-age, right? But you get those. Everybody has phobias. You know what I mean, Jim? I mean, everybody's scared of cancer. Everybody's scared of, you know, certain aspects of life and health. And, you know, there are lots of ways getting off the train here, some of them much worse than others, right? You know, yeah. Every EMS, everybody in EMS has an opinion on the best way to die, the worst way to die.
Yeah.
As morbid as that sounds, right? So we also have our fears. We also have our stressors. We also have those feelings of you know what? Nothing's going to make this better. Or I think that's an important segue into the idea that if you're watching this and you're feeling, you know, at your wit's end, you're feeling like there's your choices are limited, or you're looking at some bad choices. You should know that you're not the only one out there.
Yeah.
Doing, and that sense of loneliness that you're the only one really does make things worse. And that in the EMS, you have a sister and a brotherhood of people who may give shit. Even the person who's giving you the most shit, if you turned around and said, I'm really having trouble dealing with this, I would bet that person would turn around and seriously try to help in whatever way.
I'll agree with that. I mean, listen, that's when with my Toro Medic membership, people that join as premium members there, you know, every week I do a live Zoom call with the members there. And one of the things that I try to encourage them is that if you're struggling with other issues, it doesn't have to be an educational thing where the only thing we're going to talk about is, you know, how to get you to pass the test. You know, some of the things that I say to people they can talk about is if they're having a problem with their partner, if they're having a problem with their boss, if they're having a problem with, you know, a call that happened that kind of messed them up a little bit, or they weren't sure what they did or didn't do is correct. Not that I'm going to give them the solid answer, but it's good to bounce it off of somebody else. You know, I mean, I've been doing it for, you know, 30 years. Somebody that can kind of, you know, experience most of the things that they've gone through to maybe bounce it off of them. You know what I mean? And give them feedback, you know, to say, hey, you did whatever you could. You know, I mean, I'll get emails from members who will say, hey, Jim, I had this call and this happened and this happened. I had a guy recently that sent me a private message on Facebook and asked me, you know, he had a call explaining what happened. And then when it got to the ER, they did something totally different. They went a totally different route, you know. And the thing is, it's like, well, you know, you ask the question, well, what did you do? What was the patient doing? And you go back and forth. And in the end, it's like, well, there's not much more you could have done. You know, the hospital, they based their treatments on blood work that they did.
Right.
There's no way you're going to, you know, identify any of that. You know, it was actually somebody here. He had talked about a patient. I think it was the patient was presenting as an asthmatic. He treated him asthmatic, did everything, you know, for the asthma treatment. The patient said they were feeling better. When they got to the ER, for some reason, he went back, and it turned out the person had a STEMI going on. But he said, well, I did an EKG because of the patient's age and history and stuff, and the EKG did not say anything about the patient having a heart attack, and the patient was not complaining of chest pain. So I'm like, well, who knows after you left the hospital what happened? Maybe the stress of the asthma pushed him into having an MI. You know, who knows? You know, or maybe they did blood work and they found that he was having an MI through the blood work and not through an EKG. And who knows?
I mean, and remember when when there were things that presented as other things, and yeah, you were going through that learning curve, like asthma is a perfect one. Asthma is not always asthma.
Right.
Just because it wheezes doesn't mean it's asthma.
Right.
And what's one of the rookie mistakes in the market is giving albuterol treatment to somebody who's on the verge of APE, and then they flash.
Yeah. I remember, I worked in an area that was very high population of patients that would be in CHF, you know, be in pulmonary edema. Mm-hmm. And we actually made a t-shirt up that said it's home of the 85-year-old APE.
Right.
You know, because you would do maybe two every shift without right, even trying. And I remember the first time that happened to me, where it sounded like asthma and they had a history of asthma, and I wasn't thinking all the way through and considering the other things that might be going on, and they flashed on me. That's quite the experience. When a patient does that, you know, that's a lesson you learn, and you're not going to forget it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, all of a sudden, you find yourself moving very, very fast, trying to remember all the things that you're supposed to do.
Right.
And back in the day when they transferred us over from, you know, just pure drugs for an APE to CPAP.
Right.
Remember that? And remember how easy those first CPAPs were? You know, you only had to put together like in a record.
Five pieces of equipment. And, yeah.
Right. Yeah. This T goes in here, but one side of the T is, you know, 17 millimeter. The other side is 15 millimeter.
Yeah, and then you had the box that was about the size of a hard drive, you know, a computer hard drive that you would have to, you know, put in the back of the stretcher along with the monitor and the oxygen tank and everything else.
Right. And hook and make sure that you got the high pressure line connected correctly.
Right. Yeah.
And everything else. And you hope to God that your tank actually had at least the 800 pounds it was showing on it. Hey, you look at it, 800 pounds is a full tank, and that'll get you through a job. Well, you know, hey, kiddies, 800 pounds doesn't get you through the average arrest.
Right, until you, yeah, until you actually end up doing it. Then, yeah, I should have changed that tank.
Yeah, it's just like,
you know, and that, like I said, that's something that I try to, when I do the turd medic stuff, and people come across that, and you kind of, I like listening to stories of people who will give examples like that and how they learned a lesson. Because sometimes in the stuff that goes on, you know, people that can give that, like this, this movement we were talking about, when people kind of give their story and their feedback on what they learned from something they did or a mistake they made, it can benefit other people, you know. And, you know, listen, a lot of some of the things I saw was, you know, oh, get paid a good salary, you know, that old, you know, that old sort of drum getting beat about making more money. But, you know, when you have that sense of community and that sense of people who will sort of know what you're talking about, it makes it a little bit easier, you know, to kind of contend with what we contend with every day in this job, you know? So, but that being said, I wanted to talk about two other things real quick, Josh. Now we've been going about a half an hour, you and your COVID rant, but I want to talk about this.
I don't endorse all facts. I'm sorry.
See, you got to keep going. You got to, you know.
You know, in the comments below, there's Jim and there's fact-based Josh.
Right.
Fact-based Josh or Fox Jim. You can make your comments known to all of us. I could say QAnon, Jim.
So, I don't even know what the fuck you've been talking about with that. So, I saw this article.
If you care about this, write it. Write it in the column. You don't like it? Put it in a letter to Jim.
Right.
And if it's a letter to me, put it in a letter to Jim anyway.
Yeah, I answer all my letters. I'm like Josh.
Yeah, you know, because I keep on throwing them back at Jim. They're his fault anyway.
Right.
But folks, if you have been following us, if you have been keeping up with EMS office hours, you know that both Jim and I really care about this industry. And we bring up subjects and we bring up thoughts that you should be thinking about. And we want to hear back from you. You know, we're two old soggy medics. What the fuck do we know?
I'm old.
That's true. I'm soggy. He's old.
Let me get my puppet, Josh.
Thank you.
I'll get the fucking puppet. I'll get Mike the Medic out here. There'll be no stopping us then.
See.
I should actually bring him on. I should have him just kind of sit here next to me.
Don't do it.
So, one, I want to talk about something a little technical.
No, seriously.
Yeah, a little more serious. And then I want to kind of go back to this old soggy medic thing real quick. But I saw an article about, it was a research that was done about using pediatric BVMs instead of the adult BVM. Pretty much saying, you know, that the amount of air in excess that you could do with the adult BVM is way higher than you actually need to actually put stuff into a patient.
Right.
Okay. I mean, they talk about just the upper threshold of the amount of milliliters of powder volume necessary is 560 milliliters. I mean, for an adult male at 70 kilograms. But the adult BVM exceeds that threshold by 44%. Okay, versus the pediatric BVM that only exceeds it by 12%.
Say that last part again.
So the amount of air that the adult BVM, okay, gives, right? They have it here at 807, very exact, 807.7 milliliters. Okay. Versus
and the average is about 500.
The pediatrics, they say, is 630. Okay.
No, I'm saying the average adult, if you set respiratory settings in terms of tidal volume on an event, you're setting in the a big person would be 500, you know, average size person 400, 450 on event. So if you're looking at the amount of air delivered, you're saying that this is 800, which is more than I've ever seen any event go up to. So the amount of volume of air you're pushing into this person's lungs is almost double what the lung capacity is.
Yeah, I'm going to try to see if I can show the screen here. Hold on a second. Maybe I can show it and then we can kind of. There we go.
Okay.
Are you seeing that?
Yeah, it's a little small.
Well, for us, it's small. But in the just wanted to kind of just kind of give the abstract here. I don't want to go too technical here and bore the shit out of people, but just wanted to just show these results here so that people can kind of get an idea of why they're thinking that the pediatric BVM can give better ventilation than the adult for an adult, you know, because the amount of air you can exceed with a PBVM is way less. So, you know, like me, I talked about before, right? Given the trauma to the lungs, if you're putting too much air in, that barotrauma to the lungs, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have less of a chance of doing that with the pediatric BVM. I just thought this was interesting, something that I think we're going to probably end up seeing more of this discussion going on.
Right. You know?
I mean, have you heard of this is the first one that I've heard of it. I've heard of it previously, and I've seen somebody mention it in a thread somewhere, and then somebody else followed up and said their agency is actually going to the pediatric BVM, getting rid of the adult BVM. Now, of course, they got to buy the adult mask, right? The face mask.
And I'm wondering, you know, I'm wondering how they're measuring output and volume. Because it's like measuring the total volume in a bag of potato chips and then looking at, you know, a bag half full when you open it. There's an engineering reason for that. The engineering reason is that they want to keep the bag inflated with volume so that potato chips don't get crushed. The same thing goes with the design. Now we're going into, hey, what works better with a device that wasn't probably engineered in capacities as much as it was engineered in usage? What fits in a regular adult hand? If you give a squeeze, how much goes out with that squeeze? And there's probably some of that going on there, Jim, in terms of, you know.
And I think also
look at our longboards. Look at our stretchers. They're all designed anecdotally until somebody said, let's do some scientific research.
Yeah. And the thing is, even with the handling of the adult BVM, right, one of the biggest struggles that you know, you're in EMT school, right? You're told that it's very difficult to ventilate somebody with a BVM by yourself.
Right.
You know, to get a good seal.
Right.
You know, on the patient. And you know what I mean? And I think maybe with a pediatric bag, since it's smaller, might be a little easier, you know? Because you're not trying to squeeze a bag as aggressively to get the air in.
I mean, there's so many aspects of EMS that need to be looked at. I mean, if you think about it, remember when you were first looking for your EMT card and you were looking at the requirements of the job And the job was that you needed to be able to lift at least 125 pounds on your own.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, and then, you know, we get in and of course, you know, there's to get away from a biased workplace and you know, women being treated equally. There used to, EMS and rescue and stuff used to be one of those areas that was pretty well populated by men who are physically larger than most women. You know, the population of men versus population of women, there's a physical difference. You know, you could give it to a small, you could give an adult-sized BVM to a small person, and you know how you're able to sort of put your hand through the strap and use a one-handed squeeze on the BVM.
Right.
I've seen partners not be able to do that because they physically can't get their hands around the device without two hands.
Yeah.
So now where does that EC, you know, the EC mask hold goes? It goes out the window.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's aspects of this that the job, and we're going full circle back to like the weight requirements. The weight requirements, when you first got on the job and you lifted that, you know, 400-pound person down five flights of steps, you know, were you thinking about that 125-pound weight requirement? Because you had, you know, your oxygen tank slung on your back, you're holding up one part of the stair chair, your partner is holding up the other one, and, of course, your patient is grabbing the handrail.
Yeah, yeah.
And 125 pounds cuts that type of cuts that type of work.
Yeah, I'm thinking no.
No.
And then the other thing is too is, listen, you'll get people who see this study and listen to us talking about the difficulty of making the mask seal and this. Well, we just use we'll use a king airway, you know, right. You know, things like that. And yeah, no, I get that. That's you know, that's true, but there's still a matter of the actual air you're pumping in, you know.
Right.
And people get very excited on cardiac arrest and trauma calls and things like that, where you're using a BVM on a patient and you tend to squeeze it much faster and harder when you're excited. You know, listen, that was one of the things for a long time. One of the things that I was always on sort of my own little private, you know, mission was to get people to slow down the respiratory rate when they were bagging patients. You know, they were so quick, squeeze, squeeze, squeeze. I would keep trying to slow down, showing them the capnography waves and showing, you know what I mean? Kind of let them know what they're doing and how it's affecting the patient. And then that really, you know, for the EMTs that I worked with seemed to get them on board with that. You know what I mean? And I think, you know, and we talked a little bit before about the community and stuff like that. And I think that is part of it too, right? Is the having the community and that sort of conversation and communication with people within your little community to let them see stuff like that and how it affects patients and what they can do better and how they can then transfer that, you know, later on. It doesn't always have to be a bitch session about not eating or not sleeping and stuff like that. There are also positive things you can do within these communities also, you know. Unfortunately, most of the negative stuff is funnier and people like to bitch more. So you get more traction and more interaction with that, you know, especially on social media and stuff, you know. Now, thinking, I want to kind of round it out. Josh, you talk about the weight requirement and all that good stuff. One question I've seen, I think twice in the past week, is people asking, how old is too old to become a paramedic?
Oh, I've seen that too.
Yep. You know, and
14. 14. If your mental attitude is progressed past 14, forget it.
I feel like a lot of people are like, well, if you know, if you have a passion for the job and you can do, you know, do the class and, you know, you should go for it. No, you shouldn't.
Shut up, sit down. Thank you.
You know.
That's, you know, look, I don't.
At a certain age, that 400-pound patient feels like 600 pounds, you know. And
it depends when and where. It depends on a lot of things. But mostly, if you're going to participate in something that's a physical activity, you need to be up to the physical stress of what you're doing. I mean, yeah. I have friends of mine who have 20 years on me, and you can tell by my gray hair and gray beard that I'm no longer a spring chicken entry into this field. But I have guys that put years on me, and I look at them, and they're still riding the bus, not as a volunteer, not as, you know, full paid professionals. There are a number of guys out there, full paid professionals, but to be honest with you, the wear and tear this job does on the body day in, day out, you need time to rest. And if you're doing professional EMS, the truth of the matter is you don't get time to rest.
Yeah.
And that adds to the wear and tear. So can you be too old for a job? You're too old when you're a danger to yourself or your crew.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. If you
that's a great answer, Josh. I think that's something that I think that people need to kind of realize, right? You have to think of it. You have to be honest with yourself. That's something I push you people all the time. Oh, Jim, I can't pass the exam. It's too hard. They're trying to fuck me. They're tricking me on the questions. No, be honest with yourself. Do you really know the content? Are you really prepared for the exam? Right?
Did you really study?
You have to be honest with yourself, right? And the same thing with what you talked about, right? If you feel that you can do it and you honestly feel you can lift and do all this stuff, then okay, go ahead and do it. But if you are not honest with yourself and you are a danger to hurting yourself or danger to getting somebody else hurt because you can't lift and bend and twist and move and all that stuff, then you shouldn't be doing it.
Do you think the weight requirement should be changed? The lifting weight requirement? I mean, I know that they all have the heart rate and shit like that. Oh, you can climb so many stairs.
Well, a lot of places now do that MPAT thing where they, you know, I've done this where they make you do you got to drag the 100-something-pound dummy certain amount of yards. Then you got to, you know, then you got to drag it back. You got to push the stretcher, a fully loaded stretcher, into the truck by yourself. You got to do a minute of CPR by yourself. There's a bunch of different things you've got to do within a certain time frame. Firemen do it. They have their own thing, very similar, where they have to drag hose and drag a mannequin and all that stuff, the same type of thing. And there's one for EMS as well that a lot of agencies are doing, you know, more than just, you know, FDNY used to have a thing where you just have to push it up over your head in order to, you know, do it over your head, and that was it. And there were guys that I worked with that were trying to get onto FDNY at the time, and they couldn't do it.
Right.
And in my mind, I'm like, holy shit, and they work with me? You know, right. But you say to yourself, okay, there's a minimum there, but you have to be careful with increasing the minimum, because then you will be eliminating people from the job pool, you know, that mentally might be able to handle it, you know,
mentally might be great at it,
you know, but physically they can't. I mean, how many times you look on any of a lot of these forums you look at, and they're like, oh, I'm only, 5'2", and blah, 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 and I'm so afraid I can barely get to stretch in the back of the truck, and I don't know how to answer those questions.
I have a partner who was put on permanent disability because of a stair chair lift he did with another partner. You know, we were all in the sort of the triangle of the shifts working the bus, and he went out, and it was like next thing I know he's having neck surgery because of how his partner handled the equipment, you know, with him. And there's an aspect where there's a lot of aspects where I think that this job in its evolution, missed some of the analysis to make it a more fair and equitable line of work. Yeah. I think there's a lot of expectations, a lot of black boxes that happen in the diagram of our work that just says, this happens. It doesn't say how it happens. It says, this happens. And you put on a crew, you know, you put on a crew in the middle of a snowstorm of two people who don't have the lifting capacity between them of 200 pounds, you know, and they're supposed to be, if you think about it, the lifting capacity between two partners should be 250 pounds.
Yeah.
Which is, they think of a normal adult. Now, I don't know about you, but I know that my drug bag got bigger than my backpack. When I go camping for a week or two, I carry less weight and less bulk, including food, than we carry in drugs and equipment going up every flight of stairs.
Sure, the bag's gotten bigger and bigger.
Then add to that, you know, things that we're supposed to carry, like suction, and things at the stair chair and the monitor and the oxygen.
Yeah.
Now we're carrying all of that up.
And now the stair chairs have gotten bigger as well with the treads and all that stuff. They've gotten bigger.
Well, those big, now they're heavy carrying up, and there's ways of loading your equipment up and dragging them up, using them as sort of things. So you're both taking the equipment up, which works. They are way better. I have been called out of service. So, you know that in New York City, you have the hospital part of the EMS and the fire department, and we both work together in the 911 system. I've been called, because the fire department doesn't have the same equipment my private hospital does, I've been called out of service to help a fire department unit to carry obese people down steps, because we have those tread chairs. And the tread chairs, I've got to say, are a major freaking pain in the ass to haul to the job.
Yeah, but going out, they're much better.
Deployed, holy crap.
Yeah.
It's an absolute miracle in terms of safety and convenience.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I definitely agree with that. It's like you said, they're a pain in the ass to get into the house and, you know, and stuff like that, but going out, especially if you're carrying down 2-3 flights of stairs, it's definitely a lot safer and easier, you know, for everybody involved. Absolutely. Yeah. So, all right, Josh, let's end it there, man. I want to keep going. We've been going for about 45 minutes now, so we'll wrap it up. Thanks for joining me today. I think people get some information out of it. I hope they I'd like to see what happened with that BVM issue, to be honest with you. You know, I just hope people think too, like the sense of community with EMS. You know, we argue about the COVID stuff and the political shit, but I'm not hating on you, you know, in that manner, and I'm not thinking, you know, you're less of a you know, paramedic or anything like that because of your point of view, you know. So I just hope people think about the level of community that we have in this job. And sometimes that ends up all we have. And like you had said early on, if somebody is struggling, even if they approach the, you know, most peckerhead of people in the department, that person would probably take a step back and say, all right, let me help you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And it's something that we have to keep in the forefront of our minds, especially in this day and age. So, you know, you want to get political in the comments, fine, get political. Call me what, you know, Jim hasn't called me, or I haven't called Jim, but we've been together for over 10 years doing this. And there's a basic level of respect that we have for each other, but we also have for you. So you're watching this. We care about you, and that's why we're out here doing this, analyzing this, looking at it. So, you know.
If you want to see something in this show, you want to see us talk about us, join us on the show, just let me know. I'd be more than happy to drum this up. We can get on here together and talk about stuff. Real quick, I know I have my little link there, freeemsbook.com. I am giving a free copy of this book away. I'm even covering shipping and handling. Go to freeemsbook.com, and I will tell you in a short video there how you can get a copy of that.
Good and read.
Josh?
Good read.
All right.
Yep, that's it for me.
All right, everyone, as always, I'm Jim Hoffman.
Josh Knapp.
Stay safe, guys.